Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to get into a conversation around your corporate social investment. Some people straddle the line between that and corporate social responsibility, but we're going to be talking more specifically, around why we should be getting more and more corporate social investment budgets allocated towards health-centered initiatives in South Africa. And joining us to unpack why this is important, we are joined by Palesa Mokomele, who is the head of community engagement and communications over at DKMS Africa. DKMS itself is an international non-profit organization dedicated to the fight against blood cancer and blood disorders. Palesa, greetings to you today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Mudiwa.
So let's first just tackle DKMS Africa. We've just given, that brief highlight around what the organization is and does, but maybe you could shed a little bit more light and give us a little bit more color, around the organization and some of the work that you guys are doing, and perhaps also what the tie-in is with corporate South Africa.
So we're part of an international organization. DKMS Africa is obviously based in the continent. We are based in Cape Town specifically, and we have a national footprint. What we do in simple terms is that we give blood cancer and blood disorder patients a second chance at life by finding them a matching stem cell donor. It is quite intricate, but there's a lot of humanity around our topic. When someone gets a diagnosis that they have cancer, the first thing that goes to their mind is, this is a death sentence and I need to start fighting now. DKMS is that friend, that partner that walks next to you and says, maybe the odds are stacked against you, but we're going to do every single thing that we can in order to make it possible that you can live you can have a second chance at life. And so we work in seven countries across five continents. The unique thing about DKMS Africa is that because of our population in South Africa, we try to make it possible for every person, regardless of race, to find a matching stem cell donor, because a match is dependent on the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to something like that, let's outline where the issue or the problem is. I think just based on, some of the stats that DKMS itself has put out there, in South Africa, only 6% of corporate social investment budgets are allocated to health, which is far below, the 25% that is seen, in places like the U.S., How and what do you think is actually going to move the needle on something like this?
So I think this is quite an interesting one. We saw quite a lot of investment going into COVID, fighting COVID. And I think as a result of that, we've seen more a crisis in relation to the job losses that were experienced, the complete decrease in production, many more illnesses, many people losing their lives. And so the shift that we see is actually has not been unpredictable. We knew something like this was going to happen. The issue that we find as a sector is that there are many other illnesses aside from COVID. So in South Africa, for example, we're seeing an increase in cancers or in the number of people who are being diagnosed with cancer. Within our field in hematology, we say that every hour someone in the country is diagnosed with a blood cancer or blood disorder. This is our statistic, which means that even though you can't see it with the naked eye, it's an issue that's there, and then it's an issue that's living and breathing and pulsating. And therefore, it also lends itself to a bigger conversation around what are we going to do? Because definitely there is a need for greater partnership in terms of assisting the state to manage the situation. So this is where we're coming in. We recognize that there are huge social issues in our country, but that it doesn't help either to kind of bury our heads in the sand and say, okay, we have these issues and therefore we need to ignore these ones. What we're asking for is a more collaborative effort by corporates, by the state, by organizations such as ourselves that have the privilege to be international organizations and also the privilege to be able to leverage our connections and our expertise in order to do something for cancer patients in our country. So this is what we're calling for, essentially.
Maybe let's dig a little bit deeper into some of the social issues that you're highlighting now, because, you know, maybe to make it more clear to someone to say, okay, we've got this growth in cases of, you know, blood cancers, you know, in the country. But when it comes to, I guess, access to general cancer treatments as a whole, because there's so many different cancers out there, that mm-hmm. has always been difficult already and also quite costly, you know, as well. When it comes specifically to blood cancers, what else is going on? What are some of the other layers when it comes to either complexity or cost that people are facing?
So if you're diagnosed with a cancer, blood disorder, and you need a stem cell transplant, you have two choices, essentially, or three. The one is that they continue with, they treat you, doctors will treat you, but some patients, and this is fine for some patients, other patients need a stem cell transplant. 30% of our patients will find a matching donor from within their own family, 30%. 70% rely on a stranger. So someone somewhere in the world. It's not just in your country, in the world. And as I mentioned before, that this person will be someone of your same race. So you have a better chance of finding a matching donor from someone of your own race. And then you're lucky enough to find someone. So if you are part of the 30% and you don't belong to a medical aid and you rely on the state to find your match, and a match is found, the state, depending on whether there are funds available at this facility, could do a stem cell transplant, right? If you're part of the 70%, you need an unrelated match, which means that there must be a registry somewhere where doctors can search. If there's no match, someone needs to kickstart a public kind of a crowdfunding, which is more of getting people to register stem cell donors with the hope that someone is going to be found for you and that all these tests will be done. That's the first cost. And then let's say someone is found, depending on where this person is, there are very practical issues around making sure that this person has all the medical health tests that they need, and that the stem cells can be brought into the country where you are as the patient, depending on wherever they are. So the logistics of that as well. The transplant itself costs in the region of 800 to 1 million rands. So this is a lot of money. If you are not lucky enough to be in a medical aid and you rely on the state doesn't pay for an unrelated match. So you have to find that money somehow. And you rely then on an external registry such as DKMS to fund you. So this is the space within which we are playing. And no one plans for an illness like this. You know, it just happens. No one plans to have cancer. You are lucky enough in South Africa if you have medical aid, and also if in the event that you are diagnosed with something life-threatening, that your medical aid is going to be able to pay for you, because we've seen some patients also not being able to have their medical aids pay for their full cost of their treatment. So it is extremely costly. What we do is that we pay for unrelated matches, particularly for pediatric patients in state facilities. Because if you don't have a match and you need a match, and your life relies on you getting a match, you know, what is the prognosis for you? So it's quite distressing stuff, but so we're able to leverage our global effort in order to make some things possible for South African patients, and particularly patients who do have a match. It's so difficult for someone to find a match, because it's like finding a needle in a haystack. What are the chances that someone out there is going to register and this person is your match? Like that they're your genetic twin, you know? So it's not easy. The numbers are quite high, but we exist in a place where we are able to make it possible for patients who do have a match. And I think that's quite big. And this is why we need more and more corporates to possibly look at crowdfunding these resources and invest in the future of our country. Many kids are sitting in hospital, never having had a childhood, because they're battling something that's completely out of their control. But I think the difference with what DKMS does is that there is hope. We can find someone. We work every day to build this registry, to add as many people as possible, so that your race does not predetermine your fate. You know, that if you are Black, you still have a chance to get a match, because the stakes are kind of opposite if you're not Caucasian. The registry is very heavily Caucasian, and then other races kind of fall in between. And therefore, if you're a patient who needs a match from another race, you know, you'd be extremely disappointed to learn that only a small number of people from your own race are registered. So a lot of what we do goes into education, it goes into awareness, and it goes into actually paying the transplant fees for patients who need fees paid for them.
Now, Palesa, that's actually, you know, quite a bleak and sobering picture that you are, you know, painting there, but it is, you know, a reality that a lot of people find themselves with. And like you said, you know, for a significant portion of the country, especially those not on medical aid, you know, this is one of those, you know, unexpected things that can have huge consequences on the quality of life and your ability to just, you know, go about living your life, if at all. So from that point of view, I have a couple of curiosities. The first one is on the registry itself. I think you've explained, I guess, the importance of, you know, the racial considerations when it comes to, you know, registration, what the dynamics are in terms of demographics, who's actually registering, and where the gap in need is. But I'm quite curious about, firstly, are there any laws that perhaps, because sometimes it can be tricky, especially issues around blood and all of that stuff. Is a person able to find a match from outside of South Africa, maybe leveraging the DKMS network? And is that something that's allowed? Because with the blood transfusions, I found sometimes there can be some rules against, you know, nationalities and all of that stuff. And then the second one is the corporate piece, right? What's the actual ask from corporates? Because obviously there's the financial factor, right? But when it comes to the financial factor, are we able to maybe conceptualize how big of a problem is? Because in my experience, corporates tend to go for a big problem. So they, you know, they want to understand, okay, how big is this thing? So that we know the type of resources that need to be mobilized to attack this thing.
Yeah. So for the first one, we are governed by the World Donor Marrow Association, which is an international body that kind of governs all stem cell registries. So we belong to that as DKMS. And registries are generally able to work transnationally, so they work globally because, and therefore, well, I think what's unique about DKMS is that we are one of the most diverse registries. And diversity really just is basically, it's very simple. It's firstly by race, and it's also about the unique genetic diversity of humans. So if you, for example, are Zimbabwean, South African, Ghanaian, and Sierra Leonean, right? Or you also happen to have Indian heritage as well. Can you imagine how unique your genetic makeup is just because of your family tree, right? If you need a match, you need someone with a unique, with a similar genetic makeup to you. Where are you going to find that person? What we do is that we are able, because we're quite an extensive organization. We, as I said, that we're in 7 different countries. And the countries that we are in are the UK, which is quite a diverse country, the US, which is quite diverse. We're in Chile, we're in Poland, Germany. And most of the growth of DKMS happened within countries that are not, within countries that are more, that are in the South. So your Chiles, your Chile, India, and South Africa. Because the need to have a diverse rate, to have a registry that's diverse, enables you to give more people a chance to survive. Because if people can find, if a person's highest chances of finding a matching donor are within their own race, then you can't just be looking up in the north. So I think that's the unique thing. So yes, absolutely, the products or the stem cells themselves are moving while we are sleeping. It's a whole industry moving stem cells, moving blood transnationally is a whole field, and this is how the medical healthcare operates, right? We've had patients coming in from Uganda going to India for their stem cell transplants. We've had patients from Lesotho coming to South Africa for their stem cell transplants. I think also the other important thing maybe is that you need such specialized expertise for this field. And it's not every country that has, firstly, the expertise, and also that you have these specialized units in hematology within the oncology space, but that focuses on hematology. So this is also a gap that we have in South Africa as well, in the sense that we don't have enough clinical hematologists, we don't have enough specialized nurses that work within hematology. But where we excel in this, we really excel. So we have units in KZN, both private and state funded. So we've got the expertise. It's not 100% there in the form of doctors. We have the expertise in the form of nurses. It's also not, we don't have enough, absolutely not. But yeah, we're governed by laws and we can do this thing. And patients and donors can feel secure that they're in the right hands. So we do this. And then the second question you asked was around the scale of the issue in South Africa. So what and why, and why corporates basically should get involved, right? So I think one of the sensitivities around this, what we do, and I'm just reflecting now on the trialogue report and why we're seeing a decrease in healthcare and possibly a bigger shift towards education and other factors. What I have grown to realize within this field is that because the cost is of transplantation is so high, it's 800,000 to 1 million. And still you are not 100% guaranteed that the patient is going to survive this transplant. It's a very complicated procedure. And it's almost by faith, hope, love, medicine. It's like a mixture of a number of things that make it possible for someone to live, right? So I can imagine that from the side of a corporate, you'd go, okay, I have 1 million rands. To give to CSI, do I give it to one transplant or do I give it to an education facility that's going to train 50 nurses, right? I think this is what's happening within the corporate space. Why I think they should still fund a stem cell transplant is that the same, firstly, it's about balance, right? You need to balance these things. You can't throw everything. We can't ignore one field and completely invest in the one. But I think also that the prevalence of blood cancers is causing us to think about not only saving people's lives, but also investing in more management and preventative measures because cancers are growing in our continent. And this is linked, firstly, in our continent and particularly in South Africa as well. And this is linked to the prevalence of HIV as well. These two are kind of interlinked. So, and they're buddies. They go together, right? So you can treat the one, but the other one is also still growing, living, and growing on the side. So you can't deprioritize one and prioritize the other for too long. And so I think our call is that you don't have to fund the entire cost, but you have to fund us in education. You can fund us in education and awareness because we need people to understand that cancer is about early detection and therefore earlier management and possibly treatment. This is the reality of it, whichever cancer you have. So we need to drive this, and it definitely costs us less to transplant when the patient is in the country and the donor is in the country, because then you're saved from the costs, firstly the logistical costs, and that sometimes you have to procure the stem cells from another registry, which can be selling them in euros or dollars or even pounds. So that's also another cost that you can't possibly, you don't have any kind of input into. So if we're able to get the South African population with our unique DNA, because we know we're diverse, if we're able to get as many people as possible in South Africa registered, then we're going to find matches in South Africa. We know that for sure. So we would firstly love for corporate to fund our education and awareness programs. And also to fund those patients that don't have medical aid, because not every patient is going to cost $1 million, but it is quite costly for patients. In our studies, we know that if the patient is from here and the donor is from here, it definitely costs less, and particularly if they're using different facilities in different regions. We have close enough relationships with practitioners that we can also try to facilitate that.
All right. Now, one of the things that I like that you did earlier on was to, I guess, contextualize the mindset, of corporates, sort of that cost-benefit analysis that is likely being done right now when people are thinking about, you know, this particular problem. Earlier on, you began this discussion by relating how well the mobilization of resources around COVID-19 went. But, you know, if I was to play devil's advocate for a moment, someone would say, well, that was a widespread issue that was literally affecting, corporates, their workforces, you know, families, etc. It was so widespread. It was so widespread and so out there and in your face that it was hard for corporates not to respond in a big way. And I would even argue to say that even the barrier to entry, the cost of COVID treatments versus what we're talking about right now, it's these things are in different universes. So from that point of view, as we're rounding up the discussion, keen to get your sense on what's the level of discourse that you're having right now, with corporates. Obviously, you've given that one element around, you know, corporates thinking about where their money can do the most good if it's within a CSI context. But on your side, well, what are the conversations that you're having? What is being said, you know, to your counterparts in corporates? What are your counterparts in corporates, you know, saying to you? Are there efforts, you know, to perhaps instead of someone, you know, throwing the whole 1 million, you just have a clubbing together of, you know, maybe a number of corporates who will say, listen, instead of me giving you 10 million, we can actually band together with a couple of corporates in the sector. And, you know, this is something that we can do. Well, what's the level of discourse that you're having right now?
You know, I just want to reflect a little more on before I get to the question that, absolutely. I think definitely COVID was a very special case for all of us. But we found ourselves in a difficult spot because not only did it hit us on a kind of a humanitarian and health level, but the economy also really took a dip. And so what we're dealing with now is kind of trying to catch our breath again. And I think things are turning around now. So, yes, we fully understand the context in which we find ourselves and the uniqueness of COVID, but also that there was life before COVID. The life before COVID is also what has that we've just incrementally seen a decrease in the funding of health, by organizations, by some governments. South Africa is still doing okay in this regard, but our health challenges are quite a lot. Yeah, I think I'll leave that at that, that it's a unique situation. But coming to this point, what conversations are we having with corporates? We've been having quite interesting conversations and have observed something quite unique. The first one being that our understanding is that corporates take their cues from government policy. So if government's key priorities are maternal health care, education, skills development, that's what corporates will generally go with. And so what we find is that there's little to no niche funding, particularly in the cancer space. So an organization will maybe deal with cancer in general, but there are 300 different kinds of cancers and disorders related to cancer. And so this is the unique position that DKMS finds itself in, that we don't necessarily fit Ours is quite broad in that we do education and we do awareness of in terms of preventative measures. And then we do the transplantation, which is the clinical part. And so if we're looking for funding, we need to be having like a half an hour conversation like we're having with you in terms of trying to make a corporate understand exactly where they fit in, right? So that in, well, that in itself is a unique position to be in. But where we have had long-term partnerships over about 30 years is generally because there's been a personal story related to blood cancer. Not many people know about blood cancer. If you ask, if I asked you, do you know anyone who's ever had blood cancer or what do you know about blood cancer? This thought doesn't like really spring to your mind because you may have heard of breast cancer, you may have heard of cervical cancer, but this very specific kind of cancer and blood disorders related to it, you don't, you generally haven't heard about them. And so most of DKMS's funding generally comes from organizations that have had a personal story with cancer and who understand just how difficult words like we need an unmatched donor ring, because where are you going to find an unmatched donor? Like you just need, it's almost like if you go to a doctor and you want the doctors to just say to you, this is the pill that you're going to need. Let's take it for 6 months and see how it goes. But with us, it's very, very unique. We need more than just, our patients need more than just a blood transfusion. They need to find someone who matches their genetic makeup. And that in itself is such a unique journey in terms of how we operate. So first, yeah, that's the funding that we receive. And secondly, that we're starting to see an increase in how much we actually getting funded. And I think this is because corporates can see, firstly, that we are walking our talk in terms of growing the registry. We've grown the registry from about when we first started in South Africa, which was 3 years ago, but we took over from an organization that had been here for about 20-something years. Our registry now sits at 114,000 people. It still seems quite low, but it's been a huge increase from when we started.
Is this 114 like 114 or 140, 140?
114. It's 114,000. So these are the recorded numbers of registered South Africans. The great thing is that we're registering more and more Black people, which is what you did not find at all. In fact, I think we're the foremost registry globally with our diversity numbers. So this is amazing because it means that a patient in the UK, a Black patient in the UK, may find a matching stem cell donor in South Africa and vice versa. But I think being a leader in the space in this way is great. So we've grown the registry. We're giving more chances at life to patients. We're funding some of our patients within the African continent. When we get a patient who needs a transplant, are we able to leverage our global strength and say, okay, you can go to this country to do it. All of this costs a lot of money. Costs a lot of money because to have a dedicated team of people that goes out to do this education, do the awareness, assist patients and their families with firstly understanding what's wrong. And also that it seems like a big task, but we will tackle it together. And we've had matches from patients, from people who have come in to register for a particular patient. And so it's a very, very costly exercise, but the statistics are quite scary as well, because if we're saying one person every hour is being diagnosed, that's quite a lot. And I think this is even an underrepresentation, because in rural areas, for example, where people don't have access to even primary healthcare or very limited access to primary healthcare, never mind tertiary healthcare. Where are these people being diagnosed and where are they getting the adequate help that they need? And so we one of a few, very few organizations that are doing the type of work that we do. And it's necessary work. It's important work. It's work that's giving not just a voice, but also filling in a space where the state is not able to fill in the space.
Perhaps as we end off, you know, to round everything up that we've been talking about today, Palesa, maybe you could give us an understanding of the conversations that are being had with people that are actually registering, because we've spent quite a bit of time today talking about the problem itself, how unique it is, how niche it is, and then how difficult it is mobilizing resources around something like that. We've spent quite a bit of time also talking about the place of corporates and what role they can play there, but some of their considerations. But bringing it maybe closer, to the actual people, when it comes to, I guess, trying to move the needle on the balance of demographics that, you know, of people that are actually registered, what's happening there? And I will be specific to say, when it comes to Black people, what are the conversations, what are the factors that either, you know, stall or just mean that there isn't any take up? Does it all just come back to what you were saying just now, where you said this is just not a problem that tends to affect a lot of people, therefore people just don't know about it, or people don't know anyone who's been affected, so it tends to be something that's outside of their, I guess, general awareness? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe let me just revert back. I think I forgot to mention something, but another way corporates have actually been supporting us is we launched a very small campaign on buying a swab. So it costs us about 2,500 rands to add someone to the registry. They need a swab, an actual swab, a buccal swab, which they swab inside their mouth. And then we take this swab and we send it, we put it in a little envelope and it goes to, we have a lab, so it goes to our lab. And this costs us about 2,500 rands. And so what we have positioned to corporates is that they can help us to add more people to the registry by buying a swab. And so we have different packages that they can buy. So a corporate can invite us to come do a drive. Which is to get its employees involved and for people who are interested in registering to register. And they may say, okay, we will then pay 2,500 rands for each person that registered, so that we've invested this much in kind of adding these people to, right? And so this is one way that we've engaged corporates, and it seems to be gaining momentum. Another way is for a corporate to say, look, it's tax season. We'd love to donate money to a nonprofit organization. DKMS, we love what you do and we support you in what we do. So we'll give you some funding as part of our tax obligations. We've done quite a lot of drives in corporates. We've had corporates help us in donating and fixing some wards in cancer units in state facilities. We are actually fixing one in Tigerberg Hospitals in next year for International Childhood Cancer Month. So we try to link them to our key health days so that they can participate and also get a front row experience of what we're talking about. Because yes, as we say, cancer is so hidden, you know. You don't necessarily see people with a blood cancer, but I think it helps to take everybody on the journey. And as we are experts in this, it would be great to partner up and get corporates involved in also what we do, which is just kind of outside of just giving money, but really understanding what the impacts of their work are in this space. And then the question you asked around, you know, what's happening with Black people in particular, how are we moving the needle within the space? One of the interesting things that I found when I joined Dikemens was that I had never, ever thought about blood cancer in my life. And I didn't know that it just wasn't in public discourse. You know, no one really spoke about blood cancer. No one spoke about blood disorders. In fact, you don't even kind of know the difference. We know people who are anemic. So we know that there are people who have a blood issue called anemia, but we don't know that there are so many different, there's 75 different kinds of disorders and blood cancers. And I think when you reflect on what happened in the country, particularly in relation to education, whether this be formal or social education, there's a lot that we just don't know, right? And you don't know what you don't know. So you can't blame someone for not knowing. But where we started was to firstly destigmatize blood cancer. And this started with patients, really. So we do something called a patient appeal, where we get a patient to tell their story. What were the early warning signs? What did you experience? How has this affected your family? And why do you need the public to register? This is what we do globally. So it's not just unique to South Africa. But what was unique about it in our own space was that we could get someone from a village in KZN to talk about how they felt, what happened. And I think they could also start to put a name to what was going on. So we had quite a few stories of children who would go to school. One of the early warning signs of cancer and blood cancer is that you just feel fatigued. You feel fatigue all the time. And so teachers would be very upset with kids when they were sleeping in class, falling asleep, not participating. And the teacher would, you know, get really, really aggrieved by this. And so mom or parents would not know when to inform the school and also when the other kids would have to be informed that this little girl, little boy has this illness and therefore it causes them to sleep. It doesn't mean they're lazy or whatever, because they were scared of stigma. They didn't know how to approach this topic. And therefore, then the kid would kind of just go through this trauma on top of the fact that they're going through something so deeply personal and that this is something completely out of their control. And the other unique thing was that we found out that quite a lot of our patients were using public transport to get to and from chemotherapy. And that was a lot. I mean, traveling long, long distances. Sometimes you don't have a place to stay overnight. Sometimes you don't even have money to buy food. And with what we know is that treating illness is not just about taking medicine. It's also about, you know, the cleanliness of your space. It's about your access to nutritional food. And this made us start little programs that would support patients with firstly getting to hospital, having a place to stay, having a parent accompany. When there was a death in the family, that we would also try to contribute towards this. But the big, big, big part of it was all just education, just making this topic something that was normal to talk about, to enable patients to really just express themselves and to enable family members to be able to support a patient and to know that me giving you a part, if I am found to be your matching donor, that it's okay for me to give you my stem cells. It doesn't take anything from me except that my body just overproduces the stem cells, which are enough for you, and that you can hopefully you'd kind of get a second chance at life. These were things that some of topics about blood and giving blood are quite deep for us as African people. And so we had to start with having this conversation around the fact that it's, you don't get cancer because you did something wrong. You don't get a blood cancer because you did something wrong. You got it because there was an overgrowth in your cells, and that's it, right? So that was the topic. And then we had to shift the conversation to what can I do as someone who's healthy? And we had to start infusing education around the safety of the process. The fact that there's no operation when you do a stem cell transplant, that you're fully awake, that it's DKMS does 21 of these procedures, 22 procedures every single day. And so we've got the expertise, and South Africa has enough expertise for us to do this. I'm very happy, actually, then we started targeting universities and talking to students, being invited to corporates. And as our brand grew, people started trusting us to do this work even more. And so actually at the beginning, it was extremely difficult for us to get a space, whether in a church or because people didn't know. Now we get invites from all over the country. We've seen growth in Port Elizabeth in terms of registered stem cell donors. And that's because we formed, you know, we've been doing quite a lot of groundwork there with volunteers. We have a work readiness program with young people where we kind of train them in our work, and they get certificates at the end of the year. They get a stipend to help us to recruit and to drive this education. But the critical part, aside from having the funds and the resources to transplant, is education. If your cancer is caught late, that is very difficult. So what we push for is that people are able to advocate for themselves. If they go to a doctor and the doctor says there's nothing wrong with you, they say, doctor, there is something wrong with me. The medication is not making me feel okay. So that's where it starts. It's really all about education and awareness, because it creates the emotional space for patients and for their families to unpack. And also it's a big part of the healing process and of helping the medicine to work. Because while you're waiting for a stem cell donor, there's this hope that keeps you alive, right? And so this is the space, this continuum that DKMS plays in, that we bring the awareness, the education, the transplantation, but there's this big element of keeping the patient really hopeful that, you know, we will find someone. So we also involve our patients in a lot of the marketing campaigns that we do. And we also kind of try to give them experiences. So just because we understand that it's very difficult. But I think it's worked well with getting people to relate to this topic, and to also to relate in it in a way that is not morbid, but in a way that is hopeful, and that gives them it makes a donor want to be to register and not be scared to register and not be scared to donate their stem cells. So I think that's how we've moved with Black people. And I'm so happy to say that we've moved quite a lot. When we started, I think Black people were less than 10% of the total number of registered donors. Now we are sitting at about 55%. So we're starting to reflect the demographics of the country, which is what we have to do, because you can't have an 81% Black population, but 10% in the stem cell donor registry. You know, it doesn't make sense. So, we're very happy that I think we're on a growth trajectory in terms of getting the education out, and in terms of getting the awareness out, and in terms of getting more and more people registering, more and more patients empowered to know that we are here. And that also we will fund a transplant when a patient qualifies for one, but also that we need to work cross-sectionally in society from a corporate to a school to a church to a mosque, in order to give hope to people who find themselves in this very unfortunate situation.
So that's how we end today's discussion, you know, quite... As we said earlier on, quite a somber one, in terms of just highlighting some of the issues around blood cancers in South Africa, but more importantly, you know, what it takes to move the needle around those particular treatments. I think the long and short of today's discussion, the common thread is there is the complexity of solving big niche issues. That's the only way I can describe it, because when we think of something that's niche, we usually think of it as being small, but this is a big problem that fortunately only affects a small percentage of the population. However, you know, that small percentage faces huge costs, when it comes to availability of treatment. Firstly, on a financial level, we heard that treatments can run between 800,000 and 1 million rand, whilst at the same time facing the normal health toll that a person can have on their body, the emotional toll, of something like this. But as Palesa was helping to contextualize, in a number of communities also facing the stigma that makes it so that people aren't talking about some of these things as much, and in certain cases, at least in the past, it was affecting the demographics of people on the register. It's good to see that there's been movement in terms of those demographics, because in essence, Palesa just saying that a lot of the time finding a match is dependent a lot on race. So in a country like South Africa, where you have 81% of the population being black, it doesn't help when 10% of the registry is made up of black people. Those are some of the demographic factors that need to be changed, on that particular registry. They have been able to move the needle quite a bit because, back of the napkin mathematics says that they've moved it 4.5 times, from 10% to 55%, which is, quite a good one. And then just also highlighting the place of corporates in trying to get the awareness out there, because education is a big piece, but also some of the considerations of, when you're trying to get more corporate social investment budgets allocated to this particular issue, what are the things that people are actually considering? What are the practicalities that corporates are sitting and thinking about? Do you go and fund one very expensive treatment, or do you try and help as many more people, using interventions that have much lower barriers, as what we saw, during the COVID-19 pandemic. And and then also just giving some insight to say that actually they've been able to, where a big piece of their effort has been is around getting more people registered, and that's where corporates have actually come through quite a bit when it comes to drives, where they come to a certain corporate and then they pay for the swabs. I think it's at because there's a cost of 2,500 rand, just to have someone registered onto their database. So these are some of the ways in which they've been looking at how can they get corporates to invest even more. So that's been it for today's conversation. It has been a good and informative one. We were in conversation with Palesa Mokomele. She is the head of community engagement and communications over at DKMS Africa. Palesa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Mudiwa. Really enjoyed this.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiyo Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.